Oh, yeah. Do you want to know where I am? Or does it matter?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
No, I think we should just not know where he is. I think we should. I think that should be the gag.
From parts unknown.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect. Yeah.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That must be Jerry with the shoes on.
That train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bounty castle?
Hitler.
Just prepare to, just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Undebeatables, your Pacers audio hour, and member of Almighty Baller Radio. Coming to you from Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Jason Triplett, a.k.a. The Doctor. This show, we're talking about the surprising Larry Bird news and what it means for the franchise going forward. We're going to recap round one and preview round two of the playoffs. All that, plus we're going to give you a stat of the week and answer an undegoogleable question. Joining me to discuss all of this are two of our analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First, from parts unknown in Appalachia, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles.
Do they even have maps John out Coulson. There? I mean, do you even know where you are?
What is up, Pacer Nation? I am somewhere off I-75. No, shout out to Richmond, Kentucky, that is housing me for this pod. Doing a little road work. Apologize for the sound qualities. I'm doing work on the road, is what I'm doing. Okay.
I apologize
if the sound quality is a little different.
Laying asphalt or something.
Well, no, I'm currently stealing Wi-Fi from some Starbucks. So that's doing work, right?
Yeah, you can write that off. And from Eugene, Oregon, out west, it's our enforcer, John Harper.
What up, fellas? What a crazy week. I just can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about all this stuff. Shout out Pacers Nation. It's been wild. It's been a wild ride so far, but that's all opportunity. It's all good.
Well, let's dive right in. The big news over the weekend was the, to me, very surprising,
shocking,
and what we thought would never happen move of Larry Bird stepping down as president of basketball operations for your Indiana Pacers. And Kevin Pritchard is going to take over. Coulson, did you send our latest podcast to Larry Bird, and is that why he stepped down?
No, I mean, I assume that he listens. I didn't send it to him. I know it's in his mm-hmm. phone. Does he have an iPhone? Probably not. So someone played it for him.
No, and he has a rotary phone. We've been over this.
He has an assistant that played it for him while he was knocking back a few Keystone Lights, and he felt really ashamed and decided it was best for the franchise to step down. I have no idea where this came from. He said that he was doing it for his family, but to spend more time with them. But that's always code word for something else, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, maybe. I guess here's where my math went wrong. I said that there was a 10% chance or less that he'd be fired, or maybe a 1% chance he'd be fired. And he wasn't. And I guess we could say that, maybe there was some, maybe the writing was on the wall that he was going to get fired. But I still don't believe that. I think what happened here is Larry said to himself, I don't have enough to be great at this right now. And this team needs to go in another direction. So I give Larry Bird a ton of credit, honestly. I think mm-hmm. this is a man up move. He's at a point in his life where, yeah, he should totally be able to take time for himself to do his thing. And this is a really intense job that he was trying to do.
And going into an incredibly intense offseason, Mm-hmm. We're basically the direction of the franchise for the next 5 years is probably going to be decided. You know, he does this thing he has since he started as the president, where he hasn't signed a contract. It's a handshake deal at the beginning of every season, right? So it's easy for him to walk away. He's not breaking any contract or anything.
Yeah, he's basically the Don Draper of in the NBA. It's pretty weird.
So every year he has the opportunity to walk away, and he did that before. He also left, didn't he leave in 2010 and come back in 2012?
Stepped away. That's for him for years. Health reasons, ostensibly.
Yeah. So this is not unprecedented, but I did not see this coming.
No.
What I think is interesting, and I want to get you guys' take on this, is that he is still going to stay with the team in a consultant role, and in his press conference alluded to the fact that he definitely wants an office in the new office building that they're going to move to. So my question is this just pomp and circumstance? Like, basically there's no change in leadership, the leadership triumvirate of Bird, Donnie Walsh, and Kevin Pritchard. All those three guys are still consulting. I guess the guy that pulls the trigger now is Kevin Pritchard instead of Larry Bird. Do you think this is a real change, or is this just for show? Harper, do you have any thoughts?
This is a massive and real change.
Mm, okay.
Larry Bird can, for all the trash that I've talked about Larry Bird this season, he can fulfill a really integral role for us, especially now that we have Lance. Like, this guy can be a great mentor to his players. And if he takes the time and that's where he's able to focus his attention, he can help us be a better team tomorrow. Like, I think that is ingenious. I've always been a fan of Kevin Pritchard. Obviously, Donnie's a genius. Larry just had too much on his plate, and he has other priorities at this point in his life. Kevin Pritchard's still fighting for his paychecks. He's still fighting for his legacy, right? Larry already has that. So I think that I think that this is not a change in title. I think this is a change, like a qualitative change. I think this is fundamentally different.
Okay.
And I'm super excited about it. I want him to have an office. I want him to have interactions with our players. And I want him to be there as a mentor, you know, teaching these guys what greatness is as a basketball player. You know, he is a great scout. Like, I think he has things to give, you know, to the entire organization. But to have him focusing more on the players and that group, giving feedback but not having the final word on scouting and drafting, I think that's positive. And he's going to be a happier, healthier person and a better influence without all the stress of being the man, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other thing that I thought about was that it's removes him from the public eye at some level, which he never seemed really comfortable with.
He stared at he gave the stink eye every time it came at him. Yeah. As evidenced by every camera shot ever taken of that guy.
I agree with you. I think that's a really positive change. He had a very bizarre relationship with the media and with his team through the media, you know, and to have Pritchard now be the sort of the talking head or the mouthpiece of the organization, it allows Bird to kind of step back and maybe do some of that stuff more directly or at least out of the limelight. I think that could be really good for our franchise. You think about all the dust ups that happened over the last few years that, you know, came by calling out players in the media and stuff like that, that doesn't show well to, you know, say other players around the league or other franchises.
So are you guys, this is a big change. This is a sea change for us. Pritchard is taking the reins. How comfortable are you guys with Pritchard in the role of head of basketball operations?
Well, I think super comfortable. I mean, I think that he is, in the past, has been an aggressive person in the market. You know, he was in Portland before this. I mean, his task there was a bit different than the task here, but he's definitely been around the game and been around our team now for 5 years, I think. So that's really good. I think that the other thing, you know, as uncomfortable as Larry Bird seemed to be in the public eye, Pritchard seems quite comfortable doing that. You know, in his opening press conference, it was like night and day when it went from Bird to Pritchard. It was like, wait, what?
Just laughing it up.
Yeah. And he's like super tactful and like says the right thing. You know, a lot of it is, you know, sort of somewhat canned lines and stuff like that. But you can tell that all the gears are engaged up there. So I'm really excited about that. The thing that gives me pause is the other change that we've been calling for in this podcast is the removal of Nate McMillan as head coach. And I think that if anything, having Pritchard as GM solidifies the fact that McMillan is sticking around because he's his guy. Basically, he convinced Larry Bird to hire Nate McMillan.
Coulson?
I mean, I agree with that. I don't think Nate's going anywhere. I mean, part of me wonders whether, you know, Bird stepped down because, you know, he knew something had to change and he was trying to figure out, you know, how to do that, how to change this team, and was looking about how difficult that potentially could be. You know, last week we talked about some of the difficulties we're going to have with off-season contracts and how difficult it is to get rid of a coach who you're going to have to pay for 3 more years, whether he's here or not. And maybe Bird said, hey, look, I'll be the change that I want to see. You know, I think that means, you know, that move on some level means that the other power structures are going to stay, including Nate.
Do you think that he just saw a bumper sticker that said, be the change that you want to see in the world? And he was like, yes, I get it now.
I'm on it.
So the other potential boon here is that it seemed like there was an incongruence between the selection of Nate McMillan as head coach and the personnel decisions that Larry Bird made. So in terms of style of play and basically that, I guess, and sort of personnel decisions. Now with Pritchard in that position, perhaps he's much more flexible in terms of getting the type of guys in that will excel in a Nate McMillan system and not try to force upon him a style of play that he's not comfortable doing. Do you think that that's a thing that we're going to see in these offseason moves?
Well, I do, and I think that Nate's a good coach, and I think that the failing that we've been able to identify all season and which keeps making itself really obvious is that he's not a great motivator. But your head coach doesn't have to be that. I mean, when we had Frank Vogel, we had Brian Shaw doing that. I mean, that was his role, right? So it doesn't necessarily have to come from the head coach. There's something to be said for an even-keeled head coach. If I had my druthers, I guess for me, without having talked to Paul George, I would be done with the Nate experiment. But I also don't know who else is out there for us, right? I really do trust Pritchard. If he thinks that Nate can make this work and he can surround this team with the right personnel in this offseason to keep Paul George, I'm fine with Nate. We do need a different assistant coach somewhere, or, you know, whether that's assistant, you know, assistant head coach, or, you know, I'm not saying fire Popeye or fire Dan, like, guys are great, right? But we need somebody in the room who can get everybody hyped and, more than anything, just get everybody on the same page. We just need a communicator. And I don't feel like we've really had that since Brian Shaw.
I'm concerned about this because, you know, all season long we talked about, you know, the chemistry of this team, There's too many introverts. There's nobody in there rallying everybody up. There's nobody giving people clear roles. Paul George is still learning his leadership role. He needs other leaders in that locker room. And Nate wasn't that. You know, he wasn't that guy this season. And I'm not saying he's a bad coach, but there's something, you know, as far as all these personalities in this room not getting the job done. And, you know, if we're going to double down on him, I think getting a, you know, a clear motivator at assistant coach is just a start. There has to be real personnel change in this locker room, you know, with the players. That's got to be dramatic or nothing's going to change. We're going to just roll out the same team we rolled out last year.
No, you're absolutely right. But that's part of the problem is we don't know what that new team looks like. So it's difficult for me to tell you we should, you know, get rid of Nate wholesale without you telling me who we're getting back. Like, if we get if our decision is, you know, Taj Gibson and, you know, tough 3-and-D, two guards, these things fit with what I think the Nate can do, right? I think that we still need that motivator thing, but it can fit within Nate's system. And so until we know what that personnel part looks like, it's difficult to say. The sort of concinity of vision between Pritchard and McMillan does give the opportunity for Nate doesn't have to check in on every deal that Kevin Pritchard does, because I think that they're on the same page, or they will be when it comes time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that gives opportunity to surround this team with the right people and have a dedicated style of ball and then get the people to surround them, right? So it's hard for me to say who the right coach is without knowing what we're doing. We didn't know what we were doing all of last year, and I don't think we do now really either.
Well, no, but this is my problem, Harper. Like, we can say, all right, Nate's not a motivator, and maybe that's what this team, you know, we had a lot of situations where this team came out flat or didn't come out to play, and we lost a lot of games that way. But more damning than that is that we had an entire season and came out with zero identity. You know, we were middle of the pack at everything, essentially, except, like, steals.
Oh, no, we had an identity. We identified it early. It was inconsistency.
Yeah, no, sure. But, I mean, that's – but can you have a coach that has a whole year to work with players and a team and not figure anything out and say, yeah, that was great. Let's do that again.
It was an embarrassing year on a lot of levels. But Kevin Pritchard said the exact right thing in his press conference, which was – we did a great job of protecting our home court most of the season. What we failed to do is win on the road. And if you want to win on the road in this league, you got to get physical. I'm not saying that's the only way to do it, but at least he had an answer that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Right. So he's mm-hmm. talking sure. about physicality and defense. To me, that's the kind of identity that it felt like Paul George wanted. It felt like a lot of our guys sure. wanted in the second half
like
of the season.
That's what Nate McMillan wants too. So
absolutely. So it seems like that idea is there. Now we have to sign Taj Gibson. Now we've
well,
got
yeah,
to
right. well, yeah. I mean, Teague
make
and,
a run at Serge Ibaka, you know, right? Like, there's people.
Teague
out there.
And Miles Turner and Monte Ellis aren't physical guys, you know. Like
and Thad Young, and yeah, this keeps coming back to the point that I keep saying is that, you know, Bird felt that he did the job of getting the best personnel he could, so mm-hmm. he went out and got a point guard that's really good at running an offense, and he got a power forward that has a dynamic offensive skill set but doesn't necessarily care about playing defense. He got a backup center that's really good at offense but doesn't care about playing defense. He kept Monte Ellis around. He kept Stuckey around. Like, those are all moves that are focused on one side of the basketball floor. Now, I think in this offseason, the moves that Pritchard makes are going to be, I hope, a bit more evenly distributed, sure. right? Probably a little bit more weighted to the defensive side of the ball and maybe getting some shooting. Although it does seem like he is keen on re-signing Jeff Teague, which is an interesting move, I guess.
I will say this, though, for Pritchard. I think, you know, you were talking about how it's like night and day with him and Larry Bird. This dude is polished. Like, he's mm-hmm. a student of the game. Like, he's a nerd. He's not a professional basketball player. He's a nerd. And one of the things that he will have, I guarantee you, written in big letters at the front of the notebook for this year is personalities, right? So he's going to find guys, mm-hmm. personalities that are going to fit in this locker room. He's not going to make the same mistakes that Larry Bird did. And I guarantee you that Pritchard knows that that was an issue, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure. He seems much more locked in. One of the interesting things out of that press conference was that he said, I did all the exit interviews this year, mm-hmm. Which A, was super interesting. And then he specifically
talked about his ex. Well, you thought Larry was doing exit interviews?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought he was the president of basketball operations.
That dude's in Barbados, bro. Supposed to do? It sounds like HR stuff.
But he mentioned specifically his interview with Paul George, and he said they talked for 45 minutes or an hour or something like that. And
wait, whoa. We talked to our superstar?
Exactly, yes. Crazy. So this is all positive
stuff. And also
stuff.
Listen to him?
Yeah, and listen to him for 45 minutes.
Long enough
and
to quote
said,
him, apparently.
Every scenario that they discussed involved Paul George being in Indianapolis. So that's, you know.
I mean,
an obvious statement, but still nice to hear as a fan, I guess, right?
Well, I don't know. Whatever. Again, this dude's polished. So what's? Well, I mean,
sure.
If he went into a meeting with Paul George, he's like, "What's going to happen if you're not here, Paul?" Like, I guillotine.
Well, look, Herbert, come on. I've been in an abusive relationship with my president for 4 years. Completely it's just fair. Nice to hear somebody say the right thing.
Completely fair. Completely fair.
Just tell me you like what I'm doing. That's all I care. You know?
But I mean, I really do. I, you know, giving Donnie Walsh more power is awesome. Giving Larry more time with the players is awesome. Giving Pritchard mm-hmm. more power over scouting and free agent signing is awesome. Like, I am excited about this stuff. I'm worried about the coaching thing. But, you know, we've long said that Nate and Vogel before him never had a chance because mm-hmm. of the way that Larry Bird was running the organization. So it's hard for me to say Nate should 100% be out after this change because part of the problem was Larry.
Yeah, it's a big shadow that he casts over the entire organization. It is. So moving that shadow a little bit to the side, I think will help everybody shine a little bit more.
Right. And, I mean, just to wrap it up, I would say I think if we are going to keep Nate, we do need to get a motivator in the door. Like, where's Brian Shaw when we need him? We need that kind of figure to come in and be some part of the coaching staff just to, mm-hmm. you know, buttress that side of it. Or maybe just a great free agent signing. I mean, maybe an Andre Iguodala can do that for you if we somehow manage that goo. But, you know, there's definitely pieces that need to be moved. But I'm excited about all of that.
I'm pretty sure that hopefully Paul George brought up Brian Shaw's name during the exit interview.
He was you know he did.
You know who I like? You know who's got a good head on his shoulders? That Brian Shaw guy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, certainly there will be more developments going forward, and we will keep all of you posted on that as things develop. But right now we want to move on to recap our the first round of the NBA playoffs, which concluded over the weekend. The way in which I want to do this is we're going to do a segment, bring back an old segment that we invented on our recent UndebeataCon trip, where we went to Atlanta and went to the Little 5 Points neighborhood, and we're going to do five little points.
Five little points.
Okay. Point one. Little point one. The Paul George commercial, the Gatorade commercial, with the Souls of Mischief 93 Till Infinity track playing in the background. Golden. That thing is golden.
Highlight of the playoffs thus far.
Exactly. So good. And the fact that Joe Young makes an appearance in that, also awesome. That's little point number one. Little point number two, the Golden State Warriors won 67 games this year. They swept the Blazers. Shout out, Nico. What I find really amazing about this.
I've seen that dude next week. Be nice. He's going to take it out.
what I think is amazing about this is that the Warriors swept the Blazers, who are a really good basketball mm-hmm. team, and Kevin Durant didn't play in two of those four games. So that's
he didn't play in
scary.
Like the last 20 games, and they went like 16-4 or something
true
or some 20 game stretch. I don't know how it worked out, but that team is insane. Like, they got mm-hmm. a little bit bogged down to Golden State at some point during the season. Kevin Durant got a little injured, and they were like, "Oh, we'll just sit him for like a really long stretch. This dude needs a break. He works too hard." Golden State needed to find some of the mojo that they had last year and the year before. And then just kind of reintegrate Kevin Durant. And my guess mm-hmm. is this is going to work out just fine for them.
Yeah, what was the headline you just read? The only person that can stop Steph Curry is Kevin Durant?
Correct, yeah. Thank you, ESPN, for that.
That's a good one.
And I think there's an argument to be made that having two superstars on a team isn't additive. It's certainly not multiplicative, right?
Mm-hmm.
These two guys can, you know, potentially take things away from each other, but it wasn't that long ago at the beginning of the season when these guys were throwing up 40 assists a game with regularity. And things got a little rough for the Warriors. Teams go through difficult stretches. If they get dialed, they are in many ways, but by opponent field goal percentage, they're still the best team in the league. And they're second mm-hmm. best against the three. They're behind only the Spurs in defensive net rating. And it's like, if there was a margin of error for stats, it would be within it.
The other thing about the Warriors to highlight from the first round, in case you missed it, Steve Kerr has been battling back. His back is flaring up on him again. So Mike Brown has reappeared in the playoffs. So that's going to be interesting, I think, if Kerr continues to be out and Mike Brown, who does not have the most sterling record in the playoffs, is forced to carry them or lead them deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, but don't you think they just, you know, they rally around Kerr's injury and say they're going to win it for him and just dominate this postseason?
Sure, yeah. And I mean, at this point, the machine kind of runs itself at some level.
That dude
yeah.
will wheel him out in a – he'll wheel himself out in a wheelchair for the fun.
Sure, that's true. Okay, little point number three, in all caps, playoff Giannis.
Giannis.
Oh my god. We need more of this. We need it every year. We need it. We might need it in the middle of the year. We might need to take a break and just have playoff Giannis. did you guys watch any of this Bucks Raptors series?
My favorite first round series.
Yeah? Okay. Tell me about it. What did you see?
I just God, that guy is amazing. I'm really pissed that there was no Game 7 because mm-hmm. in Game 6, Toronto was up, what, 25?
Mm-hmm.
And Milwaukee, I swear to God, they had them. They tied up the game in the fourth quarter. They had all the momentum. They were at their house. I thought they had it, and they let it slip away.
Mm.
I fear Giannis. He basically shoots 30% outside of 10 feet. If that dude develops any kind of jump shot, he's going to break the league, man.
Mm-hmm. He absolutely might. Yeah, that series went a little bit like I thought it was going to go. I thought it would go 7 as well, but the Bucks are just a young team. They play so hard. It was good for them to get this playoff experience and for Giannis to make it through a playoffs without doing a Goldberg spear on somebody. So that's good. little point number four.
Number four.
Adios, Paul Pierce.
Hmm.
The Truth played his last game as an LA Clipper as the Clippers fell in 7 games in a really entertaining series to the Utah Jazz. And this is not only I bring this little point up not only to acknowledge Paul Pierce and you know, I remember him hitting dagger jump shots over the Pacers over the years and really hated him, but really just a classy NBA guy and will go down in the history books. Hall of Famer. He's definitely a Hall of Famer.
He's 15th right? all-time in scoring, and he's got rings.
Yeah.
So that's a wrap. And also, I think people forget, that dude got stabbed like 9 times.
That's right.
And played
totally
the next
did.
Season.
Right.
Yeah. That dude is ridiculously hardcore.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I hate on him, but he gets props.
He's the truth.
He is the truth. But I bring this up also to bring up the topic that all of the NBA is talking about with this Clippers team, who again falls in a first-round playoff series. Again, Blake Griffin gets hurt. CP3 again does amazing things in the playoffs, but can't quite will his team to a first-round victory. Is it? They have to break this team up at this point, right?
It's got to be done, right?
Right?
I don't know.
Colson, are they, it's done?
I don't know.
Rivers is going to move on, right?
I mean, Chris Paul is coming back, right? He's going to retire a Clipper. You throw him a ton of money. He's the face.
He wasn't drafted a Clipper.
He's the face of the franchise. He's going to spend most of his career there. I think he takes a boatload of money and stays there. I don't know what Blake Griffin's trade value is. He could just walk away in this offseason. I don't know if you spend a bunch of money on him. But I don't know. I feel like you probably just bring him back because you don't know what else to do. I'm afraid that they're just going to roll this thing back out again.
I mean, I really Blake's am. A max guy, but he's going to get a max from everybody.
Is he a max guy anymore with all his injuries? He's never going to play in a playoff series.
He's for every small market team in this country.
Mm-hmm. Mm. For sure.
Man, $28 million a year, whatever it is, for
without a
four
doubt.
Years.
Without blinking. Mm.
Yeah. How about this? Do you think that the Pacers could make a run at CP3? You go to him, you call him, and you say, hey, CP3. You want to have success in the playoffs. It's really, really difficult to do that in the West. You need to move to the Eastern Conference. You need
we
to
can
pair
at least
yourself
get you
with
to the
a
finals.
Super duper star. Yeah, exactly. We can get you to the Eastern Conference finals. Yep. If you join up with our man Paul George.
We got a big clutch playoff performer.
We'll give you a super duper max deal because we can afford it because we'll renounce our rights to Jeff Teague. And now we've paired Paul George with an all-star. How's that for a plan?
I love that plan. I just don't know if Chris Paul would do it. This is a great idea.
If we did that, how fast do you think Joey would stop doing the podcast? If we had CP3 on our team.
Dude, I think you already quit because we suggested it. I just got a text.
Oh, yeah. He's not here tonight.
He's not even here. He just telepathically knew.
He saw the five little points in the notes sheet, and he was like, I'm out.
He's changed our Google Doc.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I think they're going to break that team up. They have to break that team up.
You would think.
I think they have to, too. I just don't know if they will.
I mean, honestly, my opinion at this point is probably not even their choice. Chris Paul and San Antonio. Damn it.
Ooh. That would be bad. Little point number five. Shout out to Isaiah Thomas, who lost his sister the night before game one of his playoff series against the Bulls. Played his absolute heart out in games one and two, but the Celtics lost both of those. They regroup, the team rallies around him, and that team plays just fantastic basketball for the next four games, and they move on to the second round of the playoffs, and then Isaiah can go and grieve his sister's loss. Just tremendous personal human drama on stage here in the NBA playoffs.
Well, fortitude too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to see people rise to these levels under adverse circumstances is something to be witnessed. So those are my five little points from round one. We didn't touch on all the series. Do you guys have any other comments you want to make on any of the other series that we didn't really talk about? I'll take that as a no.
No, those are good five little points. I don't think it's good. I feel good about it. I feel like I learned something.
All right, let's take a break to have a word from our sponsor. This week, the show is brought to you by GlassesUSA.com. At GlassesUSA.com, their mission is to change the way consumers purchase glasses. So GlassesUSA.com was created on one simple belief. Eyewear shouldn't break the bank. It's the smart way to buy glasses. GlassesUSA.com allows consumers to purchase eyewear from the convenience of their home, offering a wide variety of high-quality frames and lenses at affordable prices and with no risk. No risk, you say?
No risk!
That's because they they have free shipping and returns, and a 100% money-back guarantee. You get a full refund if you return it within 14 days, no questions asked. Head over to GlassesUSA.com and use promo code ALMIGHTY to get 55% off any pair of glasses at checkout. Once again, that's GlassesUSA.com and promo code ALMIGHTY. All right. Joey's not here, but we still have a stat of the week.
Joey's stat of the week!
And in honor of Joey, we're going to do another LeBron James stat because he has all the stats. So, here's the stat. LeBron James in the playoffs is 73-12 in home games against Eastern Conference foes in the playoffs.
That seems not very good.
Really?
I honestly thought it would be better.
Well, so here's the thing.
He's so dominant.
Yeah. The average margin of victory in those games is almost 10 points a game.
Okay, that makes it better.
And here's this. 9 of the 12 losses that he has were decided in the final minute of a game.
Okay, that's just like UConn women's stuff there. That's just dumb.
And then apparently since the decision, he is 47-5 at home against Eastern Conference playoff teams with a 12-point margin of victory, and all 5 of those losses were decided in the final minute.
Gotcha.
So if he loses at home, it's just barely, basically.
And he gets an extra assist this week for giving Toronto an all-time 1-12 record in game ones.
Mm.
Is that good?
Great. No, that is not good.
It's not good. Oh, okay.
But shout out to the Raptors. They won a series and it didn't take them 7 games.
That is true. That is true.
It's the first time they've done it.
Also, just to add on to that stat, didn't the Pacers like have 3 of those 5 victories?
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, I think, against the Heat, right?
Yeah, on the road. Yeah.
Nice.
Solid work.
All right, next up, we're going to preview, or at least give our thoughts on these second round matchups, which obviously you guys are all NBA fans. You know they're already underway, but this is our first pod since the second round started. So let's start in that Eastern Conference, and let's start with the Cavs, who are taking on the Toronto Raptors. Cleveland has home court advantage in this series, and as Harper alluded to, they won the first game. So they have a 1-0 advantage at this point. Harper, do you have thoughts on this series, things to look for, and give me your prediction for how long it goes?
I will look for Toronto to scrap and claw their way to not a sweep.
Mm. So you're taking gentleman's sweep.
Gentleman's sweep.
Cleveland in 5.
And that's like mercy from Cleveland.
Colson, do you have thoughts on this?
I was so excited about the midseason moves that Toronto made to get tougher. You know, they went out and got Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker. And I really felt like, I mean, I do feel like it. I feel like this makes them better. But man, Cleveland just, they're so
not
good.
Not better than Cleveland.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like I really thought like this could, it might help. And I think it makes them better, and I think they probably do what they did last year. I think they probably take 2 in Toronto and end up losing this in 6.
And they struggled against Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but once they turned it on, like they dominated them the last
didn't
3
they
games.
Almost didn't blow 25.
But then they almost blew it. They almost pulled the Pacers and blew a 25-point
lead. Yeah, but they
took
their
foot
off the gas. When they're focused and ready, I'm still giving them
But that's the problem. They're never focused. If these guys were ever focused, I would have faith in them, but they're not.
Yeah. And they still, their fans and them have deer in the headlights look anytime things get tough in the playoffs. Right?
They don't think they can beat LeBron. They don't really believe. Exactly. There's nobody on team that really believes they can beat LeBron.
And they're right. Yeah. If they believe it, definitely that makes it true, right?
Right.
But I think, you know, I'm a fan of this Toronto team, and I'm think that they make a step forward this year. So last year they played the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals and lost in 6. This time I think they give really the yeoman's effort and lose in 7.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I think they can push it to the 7th game.
I root for that.
I don't see
That's
it,
all we can
I
do.
Like
That's
it.
The most we can root for. Okay. Let's talk about the other matchup in the Eastern Conference. The Boston Celtics in the first seed are hosting the Washington Wizards. The Celtics won game 1 in pretty convincing fashion. These two teams don't like each other, which is why this series is really interesting to me. The the Wizards hosted a funeral, I guess, for the Boston Celtics, wearing all black to one game this season. And things get physical between these teams. Of note, in game one, Markieff, is that the Morris twin that plays for the Wizards?
Yeah.
He rolled an ankle. And after he went out, the Boston Celtics could do whatever they wanted on offense. So they scored, I think it was 99 points in the last three quarters of the game, which is on pace for like 130-something. Washington has the work cut out for them. They are a really good team. Wall and Beal are playing at levels that really should tune in for. But I think this Boston team, after that hiccup with Isaiah Thomas and his sister that we talked about before the break, really look like a focused team, and that they're back in their winning ways. And I am going to take Boston in six to win this. Harper, who do you think is going to take this?
Yeah, this is tough for me. I feel like Washington has a more complete squad in a lot of ways. Like, if I look at these teams on paper, I say, man, Washington is, you know, third best backcourt in the league. Marcin Gortat always does, you know, special things when you need it in the playoffs. They're physical. They're tough. I like the upgraded coach. Boston's got holes, but they are, at the end of the day, they're just a 3-and-D team, right? It's what they are. And when they're playing good defense and they're hitting a couple threes, they're almost, I mean, this is a really tough team. They're well coached. They're deep. They can switch you up a million different ways. They have options and a great coach. I like Boston, but I like them on the home court. I'll take them in seven.
Okay.
I think it's gonna be a close series.
Yeah, I like Washington. I think the Markieff injury. They said he's coming back for game two, but if he's hobbled at all, he's a lot of their toughness up front. You know, the Polish Hammer can get physical, but Morris seems to be kind of the toughness factor for them.
He's the knucklehead.
Yeah, and without him, you know, you worry that they're not going to bring the fight to the Celtics. And if you don't bring the fight to the Celtics will win this series. So I think, I want the Wizards to win this series, but I don't think they do. I've got them in the Celtics in six.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the way that you beat Boston is you out-rebound them and you bully them and push them around.
Yep.
And the Wizards are already without Jan Mahinmi, who's out with an injury. And then if you lose Markieff Morris, then it limits your ability to do that. Mm-hmm. And if you're forced to play small ball against Boston, unless you're the Warriors or the Cavs, you're going to lose at small ball to Boston. So.
And what's more, Boston does a really great job of rebounding with five guys. I mean, they'll throw they got guys who will throw bodies at you from the two and three positions. They're a tough team. Not at five, but they're a tough team one through five or one through four.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they can throw lots of guys at Wall and Beal, and both of those guys even need to be special in this series. But even if they are special, Boston can keep throwing different looks at them, you know?
Yep. They've got a lot of different – you're right. They got a lot of different looks and a good coach.
Yep.
All right, let's move over to the Western Conference. In the 1-5 matchup here, Golden State has home court advantage against the Utah Jazz. Harper, what are you seeing in this series?
You got to
be excited about this series.
I was so hoping you weren't starting with me. I am excited about this series. Utah is a really interesting matchup for Golden State, I think. I mean, the length, the defense, the difference in pace. I like Quinn Snyder more than I should. This is going to be fun. I'm excited about it. As near as I can tell, Kevin Durant is back and healthy. If I say that Cleveland shouldn't lose a game or should only lose one game to Toronto, then it's tough for me to say that Golden State should lose more than one game to a team with no playoff experience in Utah. So I'm going 4-1 Golden State.
Mm. So you think it's going to be really exciting, but over quickly?
Well, I think there's going to be like one or two maybe good games, and then there may be a couple blowouts.
Okay.
Because you know who the... Gotcha. I mean, it doesn't matter how you defend them. Kevin Durant inside 5 feet, whether it's post, around the net, whatever, the guy's like a 70% shooter. And as long as they realize, as long as they remember that they have a guy that they can just post up and win with, I think that this will be a quick series.
Yep. Yep.
Even if Mike Brown is coaching.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Coulson, what do you see in this series?
You know, this is the recipe that that Cleveland came up with to beat Golden State, which is slow it down, ugly it up, play defense. Utah does that very well. They're slow pace and they're the best defense in the league. But I think Utah's just happy to be here. It was a great first round for them. I'm glad they got out. I mean, they're a young team. They need to get this playoff experience. Golden State is just too much. They're just too much right now. And I don't care if you slow it down and ugly it up if you're Utah, because you don't have a LeBron James on your team to kind of carry it. I think sure. This is over in four, and it's not that close.
And I do want to say, though, one of the things that Cleveland really did was expose Stephen Curry on defense. Utah doesn't have a superstar. They don't have a post guy to beat him up. They don't have a great one. They can't take advantage of Golden State the way that Cleveland did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In other words, Golden State can hide Curry on defense.
It seems more likely, right?
Yeah. I agree with all of those things. I think that maybe the one thing that the Jazz have going for them is that they have nothing to lose, right?
Yeah.
So they can just play free and easy. And
again, great coach.
And they do.
Great motivation.
Well, it's their first time in the playoffs. They do have veteran guys on that team. I mean, they have Joe Johnson. They have George Hill. Gordon Hayward's no spring chicken. I mean, he hasn't been to the playoffs yet, but he certainly...
Has he never been to the playoffs?
No.
Dear God.
You know, he's been around this league. He knows he can hang at some level. Gobert is unafraid. The Warriors are just super good. I mean, you know, you guys are sitting on the numbers that I want, but I'll take Golden State in six just for fun. Let's go, Jazz. Nice.
All right, let's go, Jazz. I would root for that. That would be fun.
Do you guys know who's leading the league in blocks per game in the playoffs?
It's Gobert?
Draymond Green.
Do you know how many blocks per game Draymond Green has?
Four.
0.3. No
4.3. Jesus. Oh.
Wow. So glad he's not a Pacer.
Right, right, yeah. What will we do with a guy like that?
That's right.
Got no spot for him.
All right, last series. The San Antonio Spurs are facing off against the Boston Rockets. Colson, Boston took the first game against the Spurs there. Yeah.
In San Antonio. Fashion.
Mm-hmm. In dominant fashion. What do you see in this series? This is a Houston sweep, you think? This is James Harden's coronation as the greatest basketball player in the league?
Goat!
the Boston Rockets. I mean, what was it? It was 69-39 at half in game one. Like, that's just outrageous.
Reggie Miller kept saying woodshed.
Yeah.
Is that his safe word?
Didn't work.
I think this is one of those situations where the Rockets are, you know, built to play a certain way, and if things go well, they're almost unbeatable, right? So they hit how many three pointers did they hit? Like the most ever in a playoff game or something like that. And if they're doing that, they're unbeatable. I mean, they would have beat Golden State that night. They would have beat anybody. You know, they were just on fire. And if they can do that three more times, then, yeah, they'll win this series. But I think San Antonio's too disciplined. I think Pop's going to make adjustments. I mean, they do create a ton of mismatches for them. And LaMarcus Aldridge didn't show up in game one. He's going to have to show up. But I just think, I think San Antonio's a machine, and I think they'll figure it out and right the ship, and I think they'll win this in seven.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, right? So Houston, if they catch fire, you figured in any series they're going to catch fire at least in one game, probably two, right? So that's two wins. And then you got to figure out a way to get two more wins. And James Harden can certainly win a game by himself.
Right.
And so now you're down to one win you got to scrap out. And they have enough horses now, especially after the acquisition of Lou Williams, that they constantly are pressuring you to score points, right? It's really hard for teams like San Antonio, I think, to score at that clip, even when Houston's having sort of a bad game. So I think Houston's going to win this series, and I think they're going to win it in six games, because I think that, yeah, San Antonio just isn't going to be able to score. I think San Antonio, if it makes any sense, may be a better team. They may be better at playing basketball in the half court, but that's not how this series is going to be played. So.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, they have to make this a slow, controlled half court game. But, you know, is Tony Parker have anything left? Does Ginobili have anything left? Is LaMarcus Aldridge going to show up? Like, there are so many question marks on that end. You're right.
Sure.
You know, I have faith in Pop, and I have faith in the system. You know, but you're on some level, they're just asking Kawhi to do everything, and it's not,
yeah,
you know, San Antonio ball. You're probably right to pick Houston.
Look, it's never a bad pick to pick the Spurs and Popovich, right? I mean, you're not going to look dumb.
I mean, he's going to win that coaching matchup against Antonio. D'Antonio.
You would think so. Yeah.
Mike D'Antoni.
So what did you say, Colson, just to back up? You said Spurs in 7?
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, Harper.
You guys are on both my numbers. That's why I was going to go last. I mean, at the end of the day, I think you hit on almost everything. The Spurs have been playing hero ball with Kawhi Leonard. Pop can say that he's the best dude in the league, but right now he's just not that yet. He's the best two-way player in the league, but he's not the best player in the league. That's still LeBron. LaMarcus Aldridge is a little bit soft, and he looks way undersized against a guy like Clint Capella. He lacks toughness. In game one, we saw that San Antonio wasn't able to control the pace, and I'm not sure that Pop has enough disciplined athletes around him right now, this year, to slow down Houston. And most of all, Houston is better defensively than people think. Patty Beverly is a beast. Clint Capella is a beast. Trevor Ariza plays really hard. And James Harden can turn it on when he wants. I think this should be a great series. But I think that Houston has the edge. I would have taken them in 6. What the hell? I'll take a flyer. I'll take them in 7. 7 or 5? What's worse? I can't even decide. Neither makes sense. I'll take you. I need to listen to my comments. I'm taking Houston in 5. That's what I'm doing.
Okay.
Because that's what my analysis told me to do, and then I picked against it.
All right. So you're picking Houston in 5. Here's what you got to remember about Pop as a coach, right? Like, he saw that that game wasn't going his way, and
stop trying.
Stop caring. Like, this, if this,
I don't think we, I don't yeah, think I, this, I don't think I know team, enough about Pop to know that he just like gives up.
If they'd lost this game by 5, would you still feel the same way? Do you feel like, oh, Houston's going to run away with this series?
I don't feel like Houston. You guys just picked all my numbers. I feel like there's a bad matchup for San Antonio. Is what I feel like.
Yeah, that's what
I don't think the loss is as bad as it looked. You know, on some level, it wasn't their night.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as it looked, but it was pretty effing bad.
It was bad. You're right. I'm still taking Spurs in 7.
Yeah, but I still think that Houston could have won a game. If Houston won a game by 5 in San Antonio, that just means that the game in which they hit a barrage of 3-pointers and blow them out is just going to come later in the series. I think that's the way I was thinking about it. So.
And And I mean, to have that kind of barrage on the road makes it more like, I mean, it's not like they're going to get two in a series. It's like they have a 40% chance every game to light it up.
Right.
And 50% chance at home. So the chances of winning this series by stealing game one, not just increased because that's how the math works statistically in game ones, but also because they're going to shoot the ball better at home.
Yeah. And believe me, I'm as disappointed as anybody. Well, I mean, you know, I'm cheering for the Spurs here because I want to see a Spurs-Warriors Western Conference Finals, which we haven't had somehow.
No doubt.
I really want to see that. But
I'll be pissed, and I'm 100% positive that I picked that going into the season. Sure. So I'm definitely rooting for the Spurs in this series. I just don't like the matchup.
All right. Well, that's interesting. That's the only series in which we disagree. So if you're going to Vegas this weekend, what you want to do is put money on Toronto, Washington, and Utah, because that is not who we picked.
Oh, can we do an under Googleables?
That was the plan.
Super excited.
You told us we had to, sir.
You said we signed up for it.
In the end, it's going to be better and more true than Google can give you.
Okay. Lastly, this show, we're going to do an undegoogleables. Colson, do you have an undegoogleable? You've been wandering through the woods of Appalachia for a few days. Certainly, you have wanted to Google things but haven't had access to the internet, so now we can do it for you.
That's true. I've got a barrage of them, stuff that you wonder when you're wandering around in the wilderness. So if you get bit by a snake, right, a poisonous snake, you're supposed to, the other person's supposed to suck out the poison.
I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah, no, that's a thing, right? So you suck out the poison, spit it out. Doesn't matter.
I don't think that does anything.
Okay.
I think, once again, your best course of action is to get to a medical treatment center as fast as possible.
I mean, if you really get bit by something nasty, a tourniquet is a better option than trying to suck out the poison.
That's exactly right.
Because the poison's already in the bloodstream. Like, if you catch it fast enough and suck some out, like, are you helping at all?
I don't think so. I think that the precious minutes that you would waste trying to suck the poison out are better spent.
Yeah.
Moving towards civilization.
I mean, unless you're a porn star, your heart is more powerful than your suction, so.
Right, okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Also, I wondered if you did suck it out, does the saliva deaden the poison, or could you actually get poison from sucking out the poison?
Well,
the latter.
I mean, you could, but you're also, like, throwing that, you know, hemo or neurotoxin into acid, so.
And I'm spitting it out. I'm not swallowing it.
Well, you would definitely be swallowing at least some of it.
Right, sure. Some of it automatically, but right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I guess I don't know how that reacts with an acid in the digestive system, but I suspect that a hemo or a neurotoxin, in order to be highly effective in low concentration, would need to be introduced into the bloodstream directly.
Yeah, are they? Because I think usually they're peptides, so they would just denature, I guess.
Probably.
And get chewed up in the digestive system. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's right. So yeah, Colson, go ahead and get bit by a snake, and then let Kyle suck the poison out, and let us know what happens.
That way we don't need to Google it. We'll just...
We're all about field tests.
Yeah, exactly.
We're all about field tests. And I'll be the control. I'll not get bit by anything.
All right. Well, I think that's it for us this episode. Thank you for listening. We appreciate all of the listener feedback and suggestions and undegoogable questions. If you want to send us your thoughts or another question, you can do that on Twitter. We're at Undebeatables. You can find us on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. We have a website, theunbeatables.com, at which there's a contact form if you want to send an email. If you are listening to the show on Dash Radio, we appreciate it. Shout out. But you can also listen to the show as a podcast, which you can subscribe to on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere you get your podcasts. If you're doing it in iTunes, do us a favor and leave us a review there. It helps other people find the show. And you can also, while you're on iTunes, look at all the other Almighty Baller podcasts and check those out. They have ones that are, if you're really into the draft, they have draft analysis. If you're really into fantasy basketball, they have one about that. If you want to listen to, something about the Washington Wizards or something, Zardcast is great, or any of the playoff teams that are left. We also have t-shirts for sale. If you head over to our website, a few of these small and medium variety.
For our once and always coach, Bobby Sick Leonard, now in the Hall of Fame. Turn out the lights, the party's over. Now, I did want to mention, I forgot to mention last week, we had done the undergoogleables about One Fell Swoop, and we decided it was about beheadings, and wondered if there were any beheadings in the Bible. My parents both listened to the pod, and they were disappointed because clearly
they were mortified.
John the Baptist was beheaded. But what's funny about it is that my parents, I think, were disappointed for different reasons. Mom, because she felt like I should have known that, just from my Bible knowledge. And Dad was upset that I had forgotten the trio of paintings by Caravaggio about the beheading of John the Baptist. So I also failed on my art history knowledge as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mom and Pop Coulson for...
Yep, without a doubt.
Pointing out how old
stuff
we are
that
and
I forgot.
Far removed from high school humanities we actually are.
And also for shaming Coulson. I mean, we don't do it enough, so thanks for helping.
Somebody's got to do the dirty work.
All right, guys, I think they're shutting down the Starbucks. I got to go.
So your internet's going to go away.
So that's a wrap.
Yeah, that's right. That's a wrap.